Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, we are chatting with Jeff Christian, managing partner at the CPM Group. Now, Jeff, when it comes to the metals market and some of the data and other markets that are at least somewhat correlated, or at least people think they should be correlated to the metals market, there's a fair bit for us to talk about. We're going to start off with the inflation data that we saw today, now at 7% in the U.S. So inflation does keep ticking up. Yes, inflation is, or at least this inflation data is, a lagging indicator. But the fact of the matter is, I know a lot of people, myself included, thought that the high point for inflation would have come a couple months ago. But inflation does keep ticking higher. Problem is, it doesn't seem to be helping the gold market, at least very much right now. But let's start off with some of that data within that inflation number. What caught your eye, Jeff, and what do you think about this pretty persistent increase we've seen in inflation?
Okay, you know, first, let me start by saying you weren't that wrong. You know, if you look at inflation year over year, it was up, 7% in December. But if you look at the month-to-month inflation, and I think that's very important because that tells you what current trends are. And we'll get into that a little bit. If you look at the month-to-month changes, it was 0.5% in December. Now, it was 0.9% in October and 0.8% in November. And 0.9 was the high that we had seen in June. So you might be right. And we saw a peak of inflation 3 months ago back in October at 0.9 month-to-month changes. Now, to talk about that, you know, that's really what's important, because if you deconstruct the totals. First off, you know, you have all items, and then you have all items less food and energy, which is what we call core inflation. And all items was up 0.5% month to month and 7% year over year. The year over year is important because as we go forward in 2022, you're going to see different numbers, radically lower numbers, because the numbers, the high numbers that we've seen in 2021, were measuring price levels in 2021, a strong economic recovery period, to price levels in 2020 when the world was locked down. So you had these big increases, 7% year over year. When you go into 2022 now, you're going to be measuring 2022 price levels relative to 2021. So you're going to see lower year-over-year percentage changes. But the month-to-month gives you the trends. And if you look at it, what we saw in December, food prices were up. Energy prices, especially oil prices, were off sharply. Now, these are consumer prices. So the wholesale price, which is up sharply now over the last several weeks, you know, West Texas Intermediate, that's higher. But if you look at a consumer level, you actually had like a 2.4% decline in fuel oil, and you had declines in petroleum, overall energy, gasoline, fuel oil. So you saw lower energy prices, higher food prices. If you go to the core inflation, you say, well, let's take out the volatile food and energy. What you see is that the high prices and the high price increases were all in what they call commodities. So things, new vehicles, used cars were high, and apparel. Those things are rising. And if you look at services, the cost of services to consumers, they were all relatively low, 0.3, 0.4, 0.5% increases. So what you're seeing is all of those supply things. And it's very interesting. It's very telling, because one of the things it tells you is that those people who are saying, well, a lot of it's labor costs, are wrong. Because if it were labor costs, it would be showing up in services too. You know, what you're seeing are high prices because of shortages of goods and shortages of the delivery capacity for those goods. All of that stuff still speaks to the idea that a lot of the inflationary pressures you're seeing are transitory. And as we resolve our supply chain issues, if you want to call them that, you should see lower prices of the goods, including food, and you'll probably see lower prices. So that's our take on the inflation figures. Yeah, we have inflation. Yeah, it's continuing to be a problem. But there isn't any sign of persistence in this inflation, and there's no sign that you're going to see what the permabulls are calling hyperinflation.
Well, Jeff, just taking a different track on that, you know, when we look at the services component of it, they didn't move up as much on this one. But if you looked at how things have been trending over the last, even the last few years, not even before the pandemic started, things like rents, you know, are up 15 to 20% in many cities. Home prices are up 20 to 30% in many areas. Nursing home and senior living services are up dramatically. College education and tuition is up. So there is inflation in those. It's just, it's not ramping up as much at this point as the products and services are. So, I mean, do you think that possibly these CPI numbers and even like the PPI, the, you know, producers purchasing index, they don't really bring in all of the inflation that the average consumer is facing?
No, you know, I think one of the common mistakes is people talk about the cost of buying a house. And the cost of buying houses is a capital acquisition, and the month-to-month consumer price index for a homeowner is not the cost of buying a house, because he's not buying a house every month. It's the cost of maintaining ownership. So it's the cost of the mortgage and services to support it, and taxes and other things related to maintaining that home ownership. And those prices have not been rising as sharply as home purchase prices. So the purchase prices are really capital purchases. And yeah, you know, people buy, you know, a third of the population owns their home with no mortgage and have very low operating costs. And they're not buying a house year in, year out, or even every 7 or 8 years. Another third of the people rent, and yes, they're facing higher rents in urban areas, and they're facing lower rents in other areas too, but overall rents are rising, and they are rising, you know, as you said, you know, I think shelter costs were up 4% year over year in December, 0.4% from November. So you do have some of those pressures there. And then the other third of the population are people who own a home, but they're paying a mortgage on it still. But, you know, mortgage rates and mortgage payments don't necessarily rise as fast as the prices of new home purchases.
Okay. Either way, we're seeing higher inflation, right? We have seen higher inflation, especially compared to where we were. And the gold price is higher. We do need to consider where the gold price is now compared to 4 years ago. But do you think that there is still upside in the gold price then, based off simply inflation? Or is that whole narrative of gold being driven by inflation starting to show us that maybe that's not a key driver, at least right now, for gold?
Yeah, you know, inflation really hasn't been a key driver for gold since 1982. And 1982 is interesting because we have 7% year-over-year inflation in December. And the last time you saw that was in 1982. But in 1982, when we had 7% inflation, it had been cut in half over the previous 2 years. It was 14% in late 1980, and it had fallen to 7% back then. That was hyperinflation. You know, we've had a spike up to 7% now. So if you look at the correlation between gold price changes and inflation, you don't necessarily see a high correlation over the last 20 some odd years since 1982. I'm sorry, that's 40 years. 40 years in which you've had relatively low inflation, and gold prices have gone from $250 to $2,000, and you know, today they're at $1,827 as we're speaking. So, you know, you've seen this massive increase in gold prices, along with some big declines, and you've had periods of time when gold prices have treaded water. And during that entire period of time, gold prices weren't responding to inflation. They were responding to overall economic conditions, interest rates, equity markets, financial market instability, political crises, and other factors. Inflation has been sort of in the back seat for the last four decades. Now it's coming up and saying, no, you know, it's a little bit more important. But those other factors, equity markets, overall economic strength, financial market security, you know, are banks in trouble, currency markets issues, political issues, those things all have been exerting much greater influence on gold prices for the last four decades. And they're probably all exerting more influence on gold prices today than inflation. because let's admit it, you have seen a very sharp increase in inflation last year over the last 12 months. And gold prices have been rising, but they're not necessarily rising in lockstep with inflation. They're rising more in lockstep with some of those other issues like interest rates and equity markets.
So, Jeff, I definitely want to get your thoughts next on silver, because there's been a lot of people writing in on our blog or sending in questions asking what's going on with silver, because it doesn't seem to be tracking gold as well. I mean, gold has already broken out to a new high, all-time high in 2020, and silver didn't even get close to its $50 all-time high. And so everybody shifted over to the argument that that's because it's really following its industrial metals component. But when you look at how many commodities broke out last year in 2021, copper, zinc, nickel, aluminum, iron, silver didn't really follow those either. So what's the macro factors that are driving silver right now? And why do you think inflation didn't support it like it did some of the other industrial commodities?
Well, you know, first off, let's be fair to silver. I mean, if you go back to late 2019, the price was $17. Late 2018, you know, the price was $14. So at $23, it's high. You know, maybe it hasn't risen as high as gold or silver. But I think there are a number of factors there. One is that you've had, in the case of copper, for example, you had this wave of buying predicated on the idea that there wouldn't be enough copper in 40 years to meet electric vehicle demand. And it was a speculative wave. In aluminum, you had higher prices, A, because they got hammered down really badly in 2020. You had a decline in inventories, and you had supply distribution issues with aluminum last year. So I think you have to look at each market. With silver, you didn't really see, I mean, you saw 2 years of very weak demand for silver for fabricated products, 2019 and 2020. Last year, we did see an increase in silver fabrication demand, but it was relatively small. I mean, our estimate is that you might have seen a 1% increase total in silver fabrication demand. So that's, you know, that's a relatively weak market, and it's being reflected in the price. There's some other factors there, too. I think that we've seen weakness in investment demand for silver in the second half of last year, continuing into this year. And we think that that's going to continue. And part of that is disenchantment with silver on the part of people who have said, you know, gee, I was told that the price of silver would be $100 by April of 2021. Then I was told it would be $100 by September and then December. And it's $22, $23. So I think there are a lot of people who have investors who have walked away from silver and discussed feeling that they've been sold a bill of goods. While they haven't necessarily walked away from gold, they're looking at the world, they're looking at the state of the world, they're listening to what the President of the United States says, and they're going out and buying gold, saying, hey, yeah, okay, I can understand why I want to own gold.
So, Jeff, look, the problem is with silver, too, is that a lot of investors saw gold run up to an all-time high recently, just 2 years ago. But then the problem was silver was well off of its highs. Silver didn't even come close to those around $50 highs that we saw over a decade ago. That has investors wondering, is something broken with this market generally? Because if gold's going to run close to all-time highs, well, silver should provide that torque to the upside, and it just hasn't. What do you have to say to those investors?
Well, it depends on what you mean by broken. But let me just say this. The gold-silver ratio has ranged between 16 to 1 and 120 to 1 over the period of free gold and silver prices since 1968, right? So that's a wide range of experience. And these things don't move lockstep. And anybody who believes that they move lockstep, dollar for penny, and that there should be some fixed ratio, doesn't understand the history of gold and silver and the relationship between the two prices. In free markets, where the government's not setting the ratio at 16 to 1 or 17 to 1, which was the case for several decades, centuries. So if you look at the history of gold and silver prices, they vary widely. And you shouldn't be surprised that they're varying widely now. In addition to that, and going on back, doubling back to what I was saying, you know, it was very funny because I made this comment in one of our videos a few weeks ago and somebody took exception to it. Gold is much more universally seen as a store of value and a safe haven investment around the world. Silver is much more in South Asia, North America. Europeans tend to buy more gold relative to silver, as do a lot of people in other parts of the world. So what you're seeing is the gold price has been stronger because people are buying gold out of safe haven concerns. And they haven't been necessarily buying as much silver because they're less interested in silver as a safe haven asset.
Well, Jeff, just one more area to touch on before we wrap up, and that is on the inflation side and on the commodity side. You brought up energy earlier in the discussion. I'd love to circle back around to it just because we have seen oil have a great year in 2021, but then it sold off hard towards the end of last year, pulled back into the mid-60s, and now crude oil's back up close to $83 at the time of this recording. And you were mentioning there's a differential in the spread with crude and Brent. I'd love you to expand that idea a little bit further for our audience.
Well, yeah, I mean, right now there's a differential, and traditionally or typically, Brent oil prices tend to be higher than West Texas Intermediate crude prices. And the spread, the premium of Brent to WTI has narrowed over the last several months. And it's been about $2 a barrel as opposed to maybe $6 to $10 a barrel more typically. That tells you that the tightness in the oil market is more in North America, which is feeds off of the WTI price, than it is in the rest of the world. And that ties in with the fact that you've had a very strong economic recovery in the United States relative to Europe and Japan. And it ties in with other factors related to the United States and North America compared to those other industrialized regions. It also, you know, the oil price has risen sharply over the last several weeks for a variety of reasons. First off, it was down. It was down because OPEC was refusing to cut back on its supplies. OPEC has since then reached an agreement to reduce its production. And that has factored into the increase in oil prices on a global basis. And with, you know, again, with probably the major upward pressure in North America as opposed to Europe.
So, Jeff, let's just summarize your thoughts then or expectations for this year. Because, look, this year's going to be a lot different than last year, than last couple of years because of the different policy out of the Fed and the data that we are coming into this year with. What do you think are going to be some of the key things to note for the markets, and what are some of your expectations, especially for the precious metals this year?
We think that 2022 is going to be a consolidation with gold and silver prices. We're looking at, you know, the annual average price of gold maybe 1% higher than it was in 2021. And we're looking for a sideways trend. So I wouldn't be surprised to see the price around 1820, which is where it is now, by the end of this year. We do think that the price has a scope to rise more strongly beyond 2022, but we think that 2022 is going to see pretty much flat prices. Silver, we're looking at flat prices too overall, but if you look at it on an annual average price, because you had that spike up in silver prices in the first, you know, 4 or 5 months of last year, and then the prices come down. We think the price pretty much trades sideways around $22 to $28 an ounce over the course of 2022. So we're looking for a sideways price movement, but on a year-over-year basis, that's like a 7% decline or 8% decline in the annual average base price for silver. So, you know, we're looking for some investor disenchantment to continue, and we're looking for investors to basically say, hey, you know, the economy is not as bad as we thought. We think as the year progresses, the inflation concerns will wane. Interest rates will rise, not so much as to really scare people out of precious metals or other commodities, but there will be an upward movement in interest rates. We think the real factor supporting precious metals investment demand and thus prices this year will be political rather than economic. And we're not sure how that's going to shake out, but it could be pretty scary.
Always the political wild card, isn't it? But unfortunately, that whole outlook of kind of boring sideways doesn't get too many people excited. Who knows, though? There's a lot that can happen still this year, but just the environment that we are in, I guess, is showing us that prices, at least right now, just aren't going very high. It's, again, very much a swing trader's market.
We've been saying it's a good time to accumulate.
There you
go.
Buy
low, sell high.
I like that. This is the accumulation stage, especially when you are considering what the stocks are doing, because those are way down. So who knows? Maybe those get a bump coming up sometime soon. Jeff, great chatting with you as always, buddy. We will chat again in the near term. And in the meantime, I hope you have a great rest of your week.
You too.